So welcome to Vox this morning. We're in the middle of our fall series where we're actually exploring the space between us. In particular, we're looking at how the gift of contemplation or a meditative prayer increases our capacity to live in the space between and to flourish, actually. To discover a deeper sense of bodily, emotional, and spiritual rest amidst all the things that pull on us. So I want to start us off with a question to have us think for a minute of when have you had a moment where you felt like your mind and your emotions got to rest, like where you got to go, So just take a minute and think about, when's the last time you felt like you got to kind of take a breath? And maybe it's been like a really long time, and that's okay. I mean, it's probably not okay for you, but I'm not judging you for it. I feel like I've had years where I didn't get to take a breath. So, but see if you can remember the last time that stands out where you just got a moment where your mind slowed down, where the weight of emotion just kind of like gave you a break for a minute, and see if you can remember what was going on. And if you want, you can share that with someone sitting next to you, or you don't have to. So take a minute and share, or don't, and then we'll regroup in a minute. So go for it. Okay. So, it's hard. Like, we're connecting. I'm going to interrupt. Really sorry. So how, like, you don't have to raise your hand anything in here, actually, but if you want to, how many found it kind of difficult to remember, like, when's the last time I really got to rest? Yeah, so the little hands, totally, like, I promise I'm not judging you. Probably, like, maybe a tiny bit, but not, like, a lot, you know what I mean? It's like, how are we never not judging each other? I don't know. It's very small. How many, like, something just came to mind, like, right away? Like, you felt like, okay, like there was something. So when we kind of think of contemplation, sometimes we kind of make it synonymous with rest. But I want to kind of explore kind of the breadth of what we mean by contemplative prayer or finding this way into rest, because sometimes it doesn't start out that way. But if we engage with it, we stay in it over time, it can start to open space for us to tune into who we really are. And when we start to see who we really are, we start to build our lives out of our identity rather than trying to impose something on our identity. Does that make sense? And to me, that's like a meaningful spiritual life, is you're really sinking in to that deepest sense of who you are, and you're starting to allow your practices and the things to actually support that rather than just try to change it all the time. Certainly we have things about us that would be good to change, a little annoying, things like that. But the deepest part of who we are, we're learning how to sink in and to trust. So many of us see ourselves, I think, as failures at spiritual practices because we're trying to make something that works for someone else work for us. So just an example, I met with someone a couple weeks ago, not in our community, but I asked permission to share this. And when we started out to meet, they said something that kind of like surprised me right at the start. Like they sat down, we took a breath, and then they just said, "I suck at stillness." I was like, "Okay, tell me more." And he said, "Last night I was trying to water the yard for like 20 minutes, and I thought this will be good. It'll allow me just to be still and just to enjoy the night, just be in God's presence. And within the first 2 minutes, my hand reached for my phone and I started listening to a podcast on silence." And he was like so embarrassed. And he was like, I have to listen to the thing about the thing rather than just do it. And so this is a clip of the podcast he was listening to that I had actually heard a few years prior.
Gordon Hempton says that silence is an endangered species. He's an acoustic ecologist, a collector of sound all over the world. He defines real quiet as presence, not an absence of sound, but an absence of noise. The Earth, as Gordon Hempton knows it, is a solar-powered jukebox. Quiet is a think tank of the soul. We take in the world through his ears.
Not too long ago, it was assumed that clean water's not important, that, you know, seeing the stars is not that important, but now it is. And now I think we're realizing quiet is important. And we need silence. That silence is not a luxury, but it's essential.
Cool. I think that's an image. So he goes kind of throughout the world and he listens. Like this is within, I think, the hollow of maybe a Sitka spruce tree or something. And but after I listened to him talk about, this is back to the person I was meeting with, I was listening to him talk about how bad he was at stillness. I kind of just suggested, well, what if we just removed the judgment just for a tiny minute and accepted that this might be your form of stillness or contemplation? And he looked like really puzzled. And then I said, well, did you get a break from the hamster wheel in your mind? And he's like, yes. And I was like, then you did it. And he kind of lit up. He was like, really? Like, contemplation isn't this one size fits all. Like, that's your version of it. In fact, it helps us build our practices out from who we are rather than impose some idea onto our identity. Trying to be who we think we should be is often a rejection of who we are, actually. So for so many of us, spiritual thriving is just on the other side of our judgments and assumptions that we suck at it. And the problem isn't that you aren't spiritual enough, it's that you think you aren't. I think Jesus actually understood this better than most, because the people who thought they were really good at being spiritual, he said, maybe not so much. Because it's not making you into a decent person that anyone wants to be around. In fact, you're kind of scary. It's a translation, roughly. It's probably why he intentionally confused spiritual maturity with the healing of our senses. He blended those together. And he said over and over again, I can work with you. I can help you grow spiritually if you'll become curious about where you are deaf and blind. If you're willing to release your assumptions that you're terrible at it. And so one of my favorite stories is what we're going to kind of wade into this morning. And it embodies his way of relating to blindness. In fact, our passage today reveals how contemplative practice shows us how to see. We pick up in John 9. As he walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. So the question is often like, whose fault is this? Like, right, when something bad happens or you have like a series of bad weeks, don't we all kind of like wonder, like, what am I doing wrong? What have I, you know, am I living wrong? Like, we're all get a little bit superstitious, and that was kind of what was happening. Like, who's to blame? And Jesus changes the question of blame to one of opportunity. Like, actually, rather than figure out fault, let's focus on healing. Can we just shift to that? And the passage goes on, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And when he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. And then he went and washed and came back to see. Do you ever read that and you're like, ooh, gross. Like, why? Why are you doing it this way? I think it's important also in this story to recognize the listening posture of the blind person, because that's all he had to go on. He allowed Jesus to put spit mud on his face And then he heard the invitation to go to the pool, which actually means sent. He was sent to sent. And he washed, and then he could see. It was his ability to listen that allowed his blindness to be removed. And I was just reflecting this week on some of the ways we can listen our way into sight. And many of these moments for me have actually come from being in nature. So Gordon Hempton makes that connection as well in this same interview we just heard a bit of. And he says, but if we were to go to a quiet place, sit down in the Ho rainforest, for example, and simply be alone in the silence of nature, that deep ability to listen occurs. And what do we hear? Let's take a listen of him kind of walking us into the rainforest.
No more than 100 yards along these tall, tree-lined, ferned path with moss drapes that add sound deadening to the experience. We'll hear the call-off twitter of a winter wren. This very high-pitched twittering sound that might be coming from 100 feet away. And then we'll hear further away the sound of the Ho River that drains the rainforest, echoing off the far side of the valley. And if we were taking this hike in the fall, we would hear the bugling of the Roosevelt elk. Up close is actually quite a guttural, adrenaline-filled assertion of what it means to be male and wild. But when you hear this experience from a couple of miles away, and that isn't that amazing? When you're in a quiet place, your listening horizon extends for miles in every direction. When you hear an elk call from miles away, it turns into a magic flute as the result of traveling through this place that has the same acoustics as a cathedral. I hear the presence of everything.
Makes me want to go to the rainforest. That's up in Olympia, Washington. I think some of the tallest trees in the world. We begin to experience the presence of everything. This is an indicator that contemplation is happening. When deep listening happens, we come near the possibility of sight, much like the blind person does with Jesus. One Christian mystic describes contemplative prayer in these words: contemplative prayer is a pure gift, opening us to God's presence beyond thoughts, words, and emotions, also known as resting in God. So it's a gift. It's something that's initiated by God. We love because God first loved us. And our practices put us in a place where the gift can be received. Like, we can't make it happen. Most of the time when I sit in silence, I just become aware of how noisy my thoughts are. It's like, okay, it's not very impressive. Like, very little happens in the moment. And yet, sometimes over time, I start to feel a little bit more patient with myself, with other people. It says that this gift opens us. It gives us a real space for otherness. If I can have this with God, with the divine mystery, I can start to have that with you. And it moves us beyond thoughts, words, emotions. Like, it may start there, but eventually there's a sinking deeper in, a relationship that's mediated not just by emotion or thought. And to me, this is actually something you can't really explain. You have to experience, if that makes sense. It's a gift given over time as we show up to a life-giving practice. So I wondered what it would be like for us, even in the midst of all the fullness, to try to take maybe just 5 minutes a day, maybe 3 times a week. If you want to do more, you can. And just take a minute to breathe and just to let whatever's there be there. And there's different ways to do that. We're going to be sharing some different practices over the next couple weeks. Waylon shared a couple last week, which were really helpful. So it's helpful sometimes to have something. There's great apps on your phone. There's a centering prayer app that's really good. And then maybe take a longer stretch. Maybe try to find a way. I know it's so hot around here, but to get into some natural space just for a minute to take a walk and just let yourself be there however you are. No expectation beyond that. We can expect disruption at the start because we're allowing our life to catch up with us. But over time, we may discover subtle freedoms we didn't have before. And I would say the biggest gift for me as a person who has like lots of emotions, like all the time, it's like I get just a minute to just take a little bit of a break. Like, hey, I see you, but I'm not you. You know, like you're part of me, but you're not all of who I am, kind of thing. So that's kind of one of the things I really enjoy about it. But I want to kind of offer a practice this morning even of just allowing us to kind of be in our body a little bit more and just to acknowledge God's presence with us in our body. So if you would like, I would invite you to get comfortable. You don't have to do this, by the way, so I'll keep my eyes closed so I can't tell. you can do it with your eyes open. I wouldn't be able to know, so it's all good. But yeah, if you want, you can close your eyes or keep them open. It may help to put your feet on the ground. It's just optional, just to kind of feel your connection with the earth. I want to invite us just to start to take a couple slower, deeper breaths this morning, just at your own pace. Start to draw the breath into your low belly where you can feel it kind of rise and fall slowly. As you breathe, just want to invite you to bring your awareness to your feet. Just become aware of your feet connected with the earth. Just let your awareness gently move up and become aware of your calves and your lower legs. Any tension, allowing that just to be held by your breath today. And as we breathe, starting to notice the tops of our legs, the backs of our legs, the sounds of the children, just welcoming whatever is there, allowing everything to be held in the breath. It's a breath. And just noticing our hips today, noticing our low back, noticing our stomach, any places where we feel ourselves holding or clenching, just allowing those to soften ever so slightly into our breath. And as you breathe, notice your chest, your upper back, And start to notice your arms, your forearms, your hands, your fingers. Let your awareness gently glance over every part, accepting everything that's there. And start to notice your neck, your shoulders, the back of your head, top of your head, and noticing the muscles of your face, your forehead, your jaw. Just letting everything relax as we breathe. Allowing your eyes to become soft and to rest. And just taking some slow, full breath with our whole body. Just becoming aware of our deep connection with the earth, with the people around us, with our body. Becoming aware of God's presence with us today, as close as our breath, fully accepting us, supporting us. Letting that sense of acceptance fill our whole being this morning. And as you're ready, just take another couple slower, deeper breaths at your own pace. You can start to gently open your eyes, keeping your gaze soft at first. Amen. Meaningful contemplative practice deepens our ability to be with ourselves, to see reality in other people more as they really are. But whatever we start to see, whenever we start to see, it's actually disruptive. And that's, I think, a lot because contemplative practice starts to show us our filters. It shows us what's in the way, if you will. Our scripture passage goes on. The blind person's neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same person who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself said, "I am the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they asked. He replied, "The man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see." Seeing changes us, and sometimes people won't know how to relate to us. Have you ever been like really excited about something changing and you try to explain it and it just freaks people out? Or had that happen where someone's trying to share something, you're like, "I want to be happy for you, but I'm overwhelmed." I've been on like both sides of that conversation. We assume that we know the people we've been around and we don't allow them to grow and change in our minds. And it doesn't help, though, in this story that the person who gained sight has no awareness of how weird and absurd his way of gaining his sight was. He's not aware of what he's saying as being kind of strange and a little bit gross. Because the fact that he can see is so profound and so overpowering, he doesn't care. How can you see? Through spit mud, duh, obviously. The passage goes on, "Where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. "He put mud on my eyes," the man replied, "and I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others asked, "How can a sinner perform such signs?" So they were divided. Can you see their filter? Like, they're asking, did it happen through the proper channels? Like, he's working on the day of rest. He made mud and he healed. That's work. Can't make mud. So, like, I wonder how many times have we dismissed or felt dismissed of some experience of epiphany, a moment of grace or transcendence or healing, because it didn't fit in someone's box. It's as if they're saying, even though I see you are changed, I will not accept it. I won't believe it because it doesn't fit my understanding of how God works. So maybe it's a filter of control, right? It's like, we got to brand this thing the right way or something. I was reflecting this week on what are some of our filters? What are the things we value or hold on to that cause us to exclude people and information? One writer says it this way: think of a politician who has convinced themselves they will not be happy unless they get political power. Their quest for power coarsens their sensitivity to the rest of life. They barely have time for their family and friends. Suddenly, all human beings are perceived and reacted to in terms of the support or threat that they are to this person's ambition. And those who can neither threaten nor support this politician does not even notice. If in addition to their craving for power, they have an attachment to sex or money, the poor person has become so selective in their perceptions that they could almost be said to be blind. Everyone sees except the person themselves. This is the condition that leads to the rejection of the Messiah, the rejection of truth and beauty and goodness, because one has come to be blind to perceive them. What we hold tightly to, these aren't necessarily bad things, but when we hold on to them as a way, in a way that we cannot live without them almost, it becomes a source of blindness for us. It impairs our ability to notice beauty, goodness all around us. So I'm going to share one more clip from this podcast. I realized this week as I was sharing so many clips, maybe I just need to be in nature. So I'm like, hey, let's be in nature together. So I'm sorry if you're getting tired of it, but this one's actually a little bit more around the relationship between what happens when we listen. For Gordon, it's to listen to nature, and or it can be to listen to God. It can begin to help us really hear and see other people. So one more listen today.
Real listening is about being vulnerable.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I don't even know that I know how to explain it. I mean, how would you explain mm-hmm. that?
Well, when you really listen, when you really keep your mind open and listening to another person, and by the way, I highly recommend that if a person wants to increase their ability to understand another person, that they start out listening to nature, because you're totally uninvested in the outcome of nature. You can just take it all in, all the expressions. And isn't it wonderful that when a bird sings, that we do hear it as music? The bird doesn't sing for our benefit. So there's a lot of joy in that listening. And when we become better listeners to nature, we also become better listeners to each other, so that when another person is speaking with you, you don't have to search for what you want them to say. You can, you know, dare to risk what they really are trying to say. And, you know, ask them too, mm-hmm. is this really what you're saying? And feel your own emotional response as they talk about mm-hmm. risky subjects, like how it is being a parent in the world that it is today.
Or not being a parent in the world that it is today. Contemplative listening helps us really hear each other and hear our own emotional responses that often get skipped over when we jump to respond. So you might be like, okay, great, contemplative prayer. It's great, go for it. Like, I'm going to start today, it's going to solve all my problems. Hopefully you're not thinking that. I wish it were that way. I think sometimes when we talk about something to go for, like this is the new thing that's going to fix things. But actually, when we begin to kind of practice contemplation or something like that, it actually brings up a lot of the disruption, a lot of the noise that's already there. In fact, the seasoned mystics are clear that we can expect the beginning phases of slowing down to be really uncomfortable. So you're actually choosing to be a little bit more uncomfortable maybe at first. And that's why they also speak of it in these words. Contemplative prayer is a process of interior purification leading through our consent to divine union. Sometimes it takes a while before the peace and the things we long for to come. But someday we may be able to find that deeper peace and acceptance. But at the start, I think it reveals our filters. And it kind of requires us to be willing to acknowledge, maybe I don't see as clearly as I think I do, right? So I was thinking maybe this morning to take a minute and think about what filters do we have? Because we need some filters, right? We can't let everything in or we just won't not be able to get out of bed. Like, we have to do some filtering. Like some of the filters that serve us well are when we can filter out judgment. Oh, I don't think that's about me. I think that's something about this person coming at me. Or shame, like someone trying to shame me. No, I don't receive that. It can be social media. Like, you know, I want to stay a little bit informed, but I can't do the constant feed because I stay in the state of being overwhelmed. It can also be distraction. Or like we were able to filter that out or filtering out anger that gets projected. One of my filters, which is kind of weird, I didn't realize till a couple of years ago, is like, I don't know why I have this, and I'm not saying it's a good filter. I probably am, actually. Is like if someone recommends a Christian book, I don't read it for about 10 years. And I don't know why that is. And I think that's just something to do with me that serves me. I don't think that's for everyone. I don't swear. What are my filters, though, that keep out life? Like, what are the filters that don't serve us when we get so wrapped around security or being liked that we can't sleep? When we know there may be someone in the world who might not totally like me. I've been there. Meeting expectations of others, feeling like that's who I am. If I can't do that, my value is under question. It could be money or sex or food or drink, power, harmony, control, a job, a relationship, a picture of how I want my life to be. These aren't bad things, but when we begin to really hold on to them, to give us things they can't, that's when we start to actually lose our ability to see. As we find our ways to be still and rest, we start to loosen our grip. We begin to have a little bit of space with our blindness, our assumptions that we can't be okay with these things, without these things. A little space with our filters, the filters that coarsen us to love and connection. And we can slowly begin to see how we help create our blindness through the way we hold on. As the space within us increases, we can better tell what matters between us. One more quote by Gordon Hempton. Quiet is the element of discerning what is essential. And contemplative space helps us focus on what really matters. So I named a couple weeks ago that avoiding grief is one of our thickest cultural filters. Because it causes us to move on too quickly and not process the emotions that meet us in loss. And this week, many of y'all know a couple weeks ago we lost one of our beloved community members, Terry Martin. And when I was quiet this week, it kept catching up with me. In the silence, I began to see my grief more clearly, and I was wondering, why is this hitting me so hard? Like, I definitely love Terry, but I've lost people closer to me that I knew better, and this was like affecting me on a deeper level. What I realized was that the loss was a loss for the community, because almost every week he was here, he spoke from some microphone Like, he was there in a public way, and to me, he became part of what it means for us to be Vox, if that makes sense, on a Sunday morning. And we won't be the same without him. I gave a memorial this week with the family, and I know it was at a time a lot of people couldn't make, because it was during the work day. But I wanted to share just a few of the words that I shared there. It's just a way for us to slow down and let some things catch up with us, if that's okay. Terry was a grateful person. On many occasions, I've heard Terry share his story of running with gangs and doing things he wasn't proud of, and then being so glad he finally found God and turned his life around, mostly. He'd be the first to admit that he wasn't perfect, but he was grateful. And I don't know about you, but I imagine God can work with a grateful heart more easily than a perfect one. That's just me. Terry often gave the parting words at Vox. He would share the last words to bless us and send us out into our week. And he's the only person that ever got a standing ovation at the end of church for his delivery of the parting prayer. He's also the only one who gave one to ministers after the sermon, which is super uncomfortable, but also a gift. For many of us at Vox, that last prayer will always belong to Terry. And if you don't know him today, that's okay. Maybe ask someone. There's a great story to be shared. There was a way, though, in which Terry would always do it his own way. We'd say, "Now, Terry, you don't have to share a story when you read the prayer today." And he'd nod and he'd say, "Okay, I hear you." And then he'd get up, not once, not twice, but every time. And he would do it his own way, Terry style. He'd share some story each week of how God had blessed him and helped him, of how grateful he was, and sometimes in more detail than you wanted, but always in a way that brought you just a little bit closer to what's real. And I kind of think he probably did everything with a bit of Terry style, which for our church allows us and has allowed us to leave a little bit lighter with a good feeling in our heart. I imagine God not only loves us, but actually likes us. And I imagine that God has always found Terry easy to like, most of the time. So perhaps in the days and weeks to come, we can find ways to slow down and let our lives catch up with us a bit, to find a way to rest with God and allow God's Spirit to sort us out. I want to close with a blessing from John O'Donohue, from his book of poems, to bless the space between us. For equilibrium, a blessing. Like the joy of the sea coming home to shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. As the wind loves to call things to dance, may your gravity be lightened by grace. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. As water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. As silence smiles on the other side of what's said, may your sense of irony bring perspective. As time remains free of all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all it names. As time remains free of all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all it names. May your prayer of listening deepen enough to hear in the depths the laughter of God. And we pray all this in the patience of the Father, the acceptance of the Son, and the wilderness of the Holy Spirit. Amen.